Okay. Okay. A couple of things. My short notation may sometimes be confusing. So I had a question here. What does this mean? CB311313. What does it mean? Well, C and B is the abbreviation for the authors of the textbook, Connolly and Riggs. So if you go to the textbook, and these are then the chapter or section numbers. So that's the parts of the textbook that is relevant for this week. And the other is, where do we find the repo? Some of you haven't found the repo to the that we've been using right now. And again, I'm sorry that things were a bit different from... I changed a little bit of on my plans from last year. So if you go to the... if you go to the assignments page, then you find assignment one link there. And if you click that link, you get up the PDF. And you would think that the repo should be at the very beginning, but no, it's not, because this one, I expected you to do a lot of other things before you need the repo. So if you get all the way down here, let's see. Here is a link to the, sorry. There you go. That's a link to the repo. So if you haven't found it before, it's just hidden in the PDF a little bit further down than what you expect. I'm sorry for that. Yeah. So how many of you have the app actually running? If you have, then you can, if you open your computer now and start the servers and open the app in the browser. So if you set it up the way I suggested or described, then the local host, if the machine is running, I mean, if you first get here and start to servers, and then go to, you need to write http://, otherwise it will try to look up localhost, and then type localhost INT2171 assignment 1 index.php, you should get this page. Now, if you also open, or you don't have to, but if you have the source code, you could also just open the file that is actually generating the output. So the event archive view and the view files are the ones that actually generate the HTML. So if you go look at the view file, it will define write to the browser or to the server that we forward to the browser, doc type saying HTML head, and then it will get the page title from the subclass, and it will write lots of styling information, and then it will get both the page type title and the page content and insert it on the page. So here, if you look at the archive view, it has a function here to get the content, get page content, and what it does is it generates a successfully added event, if you added an event, and then it will list all the current titles. And if we go to this one, if you right click, you can look at page source or control U if you use Chrome. I guess if you use a different browser, it might be a different sequence. But if you look at the... Okay, let me just... I had... So you see the doc type, you see all the styling, and the code that comes here is generated by the view classes. So the code, the PHP code there, is the one that generates this HTML. This is the one that goes back to the browser, and that's what the browser is displaying. So let's continue. So you can see that in the source file, you can see there is a mix here. There is some HTML here, and then I have some PHP, and then there is some HTML again. This is, we're going to talk about this next week, how we can mix HTML code and calls to the class functions to generate content. But at least it gives you an idea of what's happening here. Now, what I would like to do, just for showing both showing the workflow and for going through and to use for some CSS exercises we're going to do afterwards, is to look at the or to modify the code and add classes. CSS, in CSS you have, sorry, this is one. In CSS you have classes. So what I would like to do is to add classes to the table elements. So here we have the current titles, and I would like to have classes to the table elements. So the first one, here we have the event ID. So this I will say class equals ID. There. And after ID comes the title. So I will say that class equals title. And here it's date, class equals date, and here class equals, sorry, description. Now, if I save this, I'm using as you can see, I'm using Atom as the editor, and Atom is integrated with Git. So now you can see that on my computer it says that, okay, now I changed something that is not checked in. That's why this is yellow, and that's why it comes over here, so I can here actually check it in and commit and everything. So I mean, there are different IDs. I don't know which one you're using, and I don't require you use any specific, but it might be a good idea to have somebody that has is linked with Git, and then you can nicely commit the changes and undo the changes, everything from your editor. Now, this is saved. But then, as we said before, if I go here and I reopen the file, let's see, okay, so it's opening, and I view the page source, I'm hoping to see the changes, you see that they aren't here. It doesn't say anything there, because my file is still on my working directory. It's not on the web server. So the first thing I need to do is to put it on the web server. That's where I have this nice deploy script. So now it should, so if I open this now you see I have the classes here. Because I changed the file just locally, and after deploying, now it's on the server. So now I have classes for these. And why do I want the classes? We'll come back to that in a second, or maybe some few minutes. But at least you get to see the workflow. You change, and also I didn't do that, but that might be a good idea. Now, PHP is, as you may know, is different from C++, in that there is no compilation. It's interpreted on the server. So what if I write something, what if I have some errors in my script? So let's say if I have here, let me just make an error here just so we can see what's happening. So if I remove this one, then it's a missing semicolon. Now, what I can do here is I can do PHP. I can run PHP interactively as well. If you installed XAMPP, there should be a PHP. Now, if you try to do PHP and nothing happens, then you need to modify the path, the search path for your on the computer, so that it will find it wherever it is. So if you just add XAMPP PHP into your path, search path, it should find PHP. And if you do minus L, which means linting, to check if it's correct PHP. And what we changed, what's the event? I need to be in the right directory. So this was in the view, CD source view. So if I do PHP minus linting, event archive view, then you can see it's a parse error. So it found it was an error. So I don't want to put this on the server before I know it's without parsing errors at least. So then I can go back here, reinsert my semicolon, store it, and then before I deploy it, I can check that it's correct PHP. Now it's correct PHP. So there's no compilation, but we can use the linter. It's called the linter. It removes lint from the code. Using linter, just to show to make sure that the code runs properly before we put it on the server. Because otherwise we get strange messages from the server usually. Sometimes they are helpful, but sometimes they are not so helpful. Not to say that the message that we get here would be helpful either. Sometimes it's hard to figure out what's really wrong, but you're going to be able to work on that. Yep, and then we have reloaded the page. I guess you didn't do the same thing, the classes, but you get the feeling. So just to, these are some slides from last year's presentation that you already saw, but just to visualize what we did. So I changed the source code, and then I tested it. Actually, I didn't test in this case. What I did was just to run it through the linter to make sure that it was working. And then deploy it, meaning copying it to the web server. And then test it by just acceptance testing. In this case, it was manual. I just went here to reload it, and it reloads. It works fine. And I look at the page source, and I find that the classes are here. Class equals description and everything. Okay. So, now let's go through and see what's happening. So we know that we have, if you go to this picture, so we know that we have this interface here. Sorry, let me add a new one. This is where we have HTTP. So the browser is communicating with the server through the HTTP protocol. So in HTTP, we can get information and we can post information. Get is to go to the server and ask what's there. Post is to tell the server to modify something. And then based on the operation we call, we get a web page in response that will tell us what happened or will show us the results from our operation. Now let's try to step through this and see what's happening. So if you have the browser up and running, we're going to bring up the inspection tools. And you can, on Chrome, you can say inspect. And if you see here, if you do Control Shift I or Control Capital I, you're going to get the inspect window. And the inspect window comes up here. So here we can see the elements. Now what we want to do now is to go and look at the network traffic. So if you click network, and we say preserve log, meaning that it will remember the activity, the communication you've had with the server. And let's start by just bringing up this page. So we see here, there is a, well, let me see if I can bring it up more. So we see here, I think I may need to make this smaller. Then we can see more. What happened is that there was an index.php, and I can open that request, and I can find that it was a GET request, and it was okay. I got 200. It was on the local machine on port 80, and I can see the response header was quite a lot of things. And let me see where I, what is the format and some caching information. Now, this is what explains the behavior we described when we looked at why the incognito window didn't see the same thing as the my main window here, is that I have this session object, the session cookie. So the cookie is, you know cookie, what a cookie in the web browser is? It's a piece of data that's been stored on your computer. So whenever you go to a web page, they may send you a cookie back. And the cookie is stored on your computer. So next time you go to the same web page or the same site, it will send the cookie. And in this case, what it sends is the ID of your PHP session. And each user gets their own. So that's, and I store the current the version of the assignment code. It stores data in the session. So it means that it has one event archive for each user. That's why when one user changed something, the other user won't see it. But that's what you're going to replace by storing this in the database. So when one user changes, the other user is going to see the same thing. That's the whole exercise you're going to be doing. Now, what we like to do is add an event and open the details. Okay, so let's go here. I can just make this smaller. So what we like to do is to add an event. So I have, let's do a test again. Sorry, today's date. and just add some description. Okay, so we added an event. Now I want to look at this event, so I'm going to click it here. So I see the details about the event. I can't change the ID, you see, because the ID is generated by the database, so that's why I didn't allow the user to change it. But the other ones the user can change. So what did we say in the... So let's change the title. Okay, let's change the title to something else. And then we can update it. Now we see it got its new name here. So I can go and look at it again. And now we delete it. Sorry. Let's delete it. And let's add another one. Just so we have a little bit of history we can go through. Another yet. Date is mandatory. Oh, okay. I forgot that. So, another yet, and I need to remember to add a date. So, hopefully, I don't know if you did the same, but that was too quick to do all. Try to do at least add one and look at it and modify and store it so that you have a little bit of history here. So bring up the inspection window, put up preserve log, and then you have that trace of history. Do you have a couple at least? Because what you can do then is you can follow here. You see the waterfall? It basically gives a time when these calls were. So we have the first one, and then I was talking a lot, and then I did a sequence of others. Now we can go to each one of these, and we can see that, okay, it was a get. So the first thing I did was just to load the whole event, and then I added one, and then you can see this is a post, and if I go down to the details, I can see what was being posted, and what's being posted is a form where the operation was to add something. The title of the event to be added was test, the date was this one, and description was some text. So this is what's being passed from the browser to the server, and this is what we on the server can pick up with the PHP code and enter into the database. So the next, we click the video, or sorry, it's event, and when we click the event, we got an event get. Now what's specific here is that you can see this search string. So the search string tells what video I would like to, or event, what did I say video? Events. The event I would like to see. And you can see here as well in the request that the query string parameter is ID 9, which is something that we can get in the PHP script of the server, so you know what event you would like to see the details about. Then the next thing I did was to modify. So what is modify? Well, I'm going to change something, so now it's a post. because I want to change something on the server. I want to post something new to the server. And what I posted was a mod to modify it, was the operation I posted. And the event with ID 9 is now supposed to have the name test automation. And then I went on to look at the details. So it was a get, and the get was the ID number 9. And then, if you remember, I deleted it. And deleting is to post, because I want to change the server. And what I did was I deleted, because the operation is deleted, and the ID is number 9. So hopefully you get to see that what we're doing in the app is to go from listing content to change content, list content, change content. And there are gets and posts. And the reason for showing this is that when you have some issue, when you would like to figure out what's happening, just bring up the inspection window. And then you can look at the network traffic, if that's what you'd like to do. Or you could see all the elements in the document that you have just loaded in an element view. And that we soon going to, I think we're going to skip this one. If you do the incognito window, what you're going to see is that the session ID is different. So I don't think we need to do that. I think we'll more people are going to fall asleep if we spend too much time on this. Let's play around. In the source code, if you just to give you an idea of how the code is organized. So if you look at the event archive view, you see here that at the very bottom, I have the add form. So this is where I create that form where I can enter the information about the title, the date, and the description. And if I go to, I haven't that one here, but if I go to event view, you can see that in the event view, there are two forms. There's one form to modify the content of the event, and there is one to delete it. So the delete button is actually a form. And what you can see here is that in all those forms, I have an input, a hidden input field that tells me what is the operation. Is it modifying, adding, deleting? That's being passed here in this hidden input field. It's being passed, and that's the. But the user don't see it. So when I look at this page here, let's see. I don't see the add input field because it's hidden. I just see title, date, and description. The other field, and if you look here on the elements here, so this is the form. You can see there is a hidden called operation that's add. That one I don't see because it's hidden, but it's still passed. So what's happening is that I know I would like to add something here, but the web server doesn't know what it sent last time. It just sent a page and doesn't know anything about the page. So I need to tell the page that or when I come back that what you wrote was that this form is for adding, because the server doesn't remember that. Is it totally confusing? Yeah? use the tools, step through the way I do it, look at what's happening, look at the HTML code, look at the HTTP calls, and see what's happening. I was thinking just to do this. Yeah, we added this already. And then let's look at CSS selectors. Why am I including this here? Well, because it's part of the web. How many of you have written some CSS before? Yeah, so you know that when you write CSS, you write that a certain type of element is going to have a certain appearance. But we are going to use CSS selectors in our acceptance tests, because as I said, in the acceptance test, when we get the page, we would like to write a test that will say, okay, now the ID here should be this, the link there should be this, there should be so many rows here. So we want to look at the content of a web page. And for doing that, sometimes we would like to see what's actually in a certain element or on a certain part of the page. And that's where CSS selectors come in handy. How many of you did look at the CSS tutorial, W3 School CSS tutorial? There was a link, and it was one of the things I recommended doing. Not so many. Right. Have a look at the CSS selector tutorial, because the way to get familiar with this is to try yourself. I don't know how many of you actually have a computer and are able to find the title cell. So let me at least show you. I can show you first, and then you could try on one of the other cells. Now, if we go here, and we have these are the elements. So this is structured in just a different way. This is the HTML content. If I here do Control F for finding, then I get up a small dialog window where I can actually type in a CSS selector. And what we were saying is that we like to find the title of the title here. And if I now go down here with my cursor, let's see, it's in the table and in the body of the table, and it's the second one I'm interested in, and is this title. That's the one that I'm going to be looking for. You can see here that the inspection window already says that, okay, what is this? It's HTML, and a child of HTML is body. Child of body is the table event list. Child of the event list is a tbody. Child of tbody is the tr with the ID event 2. And it has a title cell. So that's kind of the structure. So we have the HTML page. It has a body. Inside the body, there is a table. And the table has an ID here, event list, which means that I can here go and search for event list. Event list. And see that there is an event list. Because if I use the hash sign, I'm going to use the ID. I could also say table, but I don't have to. Why is that? Because ID is unique. So table. So whether I say table with the ID event list, or I say whatever element with the event list as the ID. Since there's only one, and it happened to be a table element, it doesn't matter if I do table or not. And if I want to find this specific, the title, then what I could do is to say, okay, inside event 2, which is the ID for the row of event 2, I'm looking for table cell, TD, table data. But what you can see here is that there are four different that satisfy this query. I'm only interested in the title, which happened to be the second one. So what can I do then? Well, I can say that I'm looking for the nth child as a function. So you can see in the acceptance test code that you're going to get, you can see that I'm using this. I want to see, do I have the correct title displayed on the page? And then I'm going to use this query. Now, what we did earlier today, or I did, was I added class names. And the good thing with class names is that I can now use the class name instead. So I could say, I'm looking for the TD where the class name is title. So then I don't have to know whether it was the first or second or third or fourth element. I don't know, need to know the order of the various attributes. I just want to need the title. So if I did it this way, my acceptance test would be more robust and they would be better. So sometimes it makes sense to think about IDs and classes when we design HTML because it made it easier to do the acceptance testing later on. So feel free to do this on the project and then change the acceptance tests if you want to, or you just keep the ones that I had before where we could do the, say, okay, rather than this, we can always say that is the nth child. And n in this case is 2. Now, what is frustrating and going to take you a lot of time to get used to is that inside SQL strings, inside XML that we were working on, inside CSS, table elements start with index 1. In PHP, they start with index 0. So if we are writing a PHP code, we need to remember that the first element has index 0. When we do CSS selection, or we do SQL strings, or we do XML, then we have to remember the first one is 1, not 0. So the good thing with standards is that there are you can choose the ones you like. They don't have to be the same. Yeah, so we're just going to keep... and now, the final one, I think, for the day is, what if you like to find the title input element on the add form? So, if we go here... So what we're interested in is the add form, and we would like the title element, this one. So let's find it here. We have a form with the ID add form, and we have the input, this one. Now, so we can see here that it is child of add form. Now, in this case, we would like to have the add form where name equals title. Sorry. Title. No, not add form, because add form should have an input child. So we can use conditions as well. So here, what we're saying is that add form has a child element input, and we are not interested in all of them, because if I delete this, I get all the input children, and we find that there are 5 of them. So I could again say, okay, input being the nth child, and now n is 2 again, isn't it? Sorry, nth child. Did I type something wrong here? No, sorry. It's not 2. It's 3, because it's not the. It's this is number 1, number 2, number 3. Now this is the third child. It's an input. That's the third child on this parent. Yeah, I know it's confusing. It's not the second input element. It's the third element. Because look here, form has three elements, and the three being, so we could also just do this. Don't have to say what it is. The third child of add form. But I think you agree that that you're saying that this should be input, and we put a condition. Condition being name equals title. I know it's a lot of stuff. It's quite confusing. But I hope that we have, or I know that we have another 2.5 weeks to sort it out. And at least you have seen the workflow, you have seen the tools, and you're going to forget exactly where they were. So you're going to be needing some assistance or needed to try to dig back. But try to get familiar with the tools and try to understand the overall architecture, because then it's easier to understand what's happening. So, the summary, what I hope and that you remember from today is the three-tier architecture. We have the browser, we have the web server, we have the database server. Inside the web server, we have the PHP interpreter. The PHP interpreter gets activated whenever we have a PHP code inside a PHP file, and it's going to run the code, and whatever it writes, it's going to come back in the HTML document. And you've seen a little bit HTTP, the GET and the POST, and how parameters are being passed in POSTs, and how query strings are passed in GETs. And you've seen how you can look at the source code on a page, and how you can monitor the traffic, and look at the and use the CSS selectors to find the actual elements. And finally, as I said on Tuesday, I can't discover for you. You have to discover yourself. I've shown you a little bit of the tools, a little bit of what we're trying to play with, but you have to do the playing. Okay, thank you. And then I'll be in the lab in a few minutes, so if you want to continue exploring and working, I'm going to be in the lab.